Blackbaud Church Management is the only church software backed by the world's leading cloud software company powering social good. This enterprise-level solution goes beyond just managing your church. It seamlessly connects your church to your ministry all in one platform. Blackbaud Church Management connects your staff and congregation, ensuring deeper relationships and effective ministry. To see more, visit hello.blackbaud.com/Blackbaud Church Management.
Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Group Answers podcast show. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt. Chris, it's good to be back.
It's good to have you. I told everybody in the last two episodes that you were climbing a 14K somewhere.
Yeah, I would have loved it if that was the case, but I was really out looking for my father-in-law's Facebook. He said he lost it. He's not great with computers, so he called and said, I've lost Facebook. And he said, what do you mean? What do you mean it's gone? He said, it's just gone. It's gone. Facebook's gone. I don't know where it is. So
yeah,
we were out looking for that.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I hope you found it. My father kind of did the same thing when we got him started with Facebook. We, you know, said all you got to do is log in. And this was before apps, so you didn't download anything. You just log into Facebook. My dad called us and said, I've been trying to download that Facebook for the last 2 days, and I haven't been able to do it. And so we said, no, Dad, you don't need to download it. You just log in. But he's now in Facebook, and it's great.
Well, my wife, Karen, friend of the show, right? She's been a guest,
yeah.
That's right. She set up a link for him, and I think what happened is he just knows to click that link. He doesn't know any of the magic that happens. In fact, I guess it is magic to him. So somehow that link was gone, so it was just a matter of I don't know why it took me two show hiatus to find it, but we just had to reestablish that link. It's good to be back. It's great to be acknowledged. I really missed you guys.
We missed you. It was not the same. We had good shows with Eddie Mosley.
How could it be?
Yeah, we had good shows with Eddie Mosley. He came in and did a great job. We were talking about Group Killers, which if you haven't heard that series, we did a four-part series on things that can kill your group. But Eddie came in and dropped some wisdom on us all the way from Brentwood, Tennessee. But it is not the same without, it's not, you said this is an exciting episode. It's not exciting without you. That's what brings the excitement.
Well, that's as good a segue as any. So we move from a four-part series to a two-part series.
Yes, we do.
Which is as good a time as any to introduce today's special guest.
We've got Mr. Ken Brady in the room.
We need one of those buttons you push where you get the applause.
I can add that in post.
I could actually sit over here and just clap for myself if that would help.
So Ken is the newly minted, if I can put it that way. And we were just talking about where you are in the chronology, this is quite the honor to be named, I think you said, the seventh director of Sunday school of what was initially the Baptist Sunday School Board, and now, of course, Lifeway Christian Resources. So, Ken, congratulations. I know that is a big deal and something that you're really excited about.
I am excited, and I'm not quite sure what number I am. You asked a great question before we went on air, and I'll have to go count now and see exactly, but it's probably number seven or eight, somewhere right in there.
It's not many, and it is a longstanding tradition of an entity or institution, I guess is better put, that has, I don't know, I mean, contributed probably with greater significance than any other institution in the evangelical church. I mean, that could be said. That's safe, right?
I think that's safe.
I think, yeah, I would say that's safe. And you've followed some pretty decent people.
I have.
Infinitely decent.
Alan Taylor, David went back to the church. David Francis, yes. Bill Taylor, Harry Pyland, whom I learned a lot from by going to his conferences at our Glorieta Conference Center when that was open. Took many groups out there several summers in a row to get training and had the privilege of sitting under Dr. Pyland. So, yeah, it's a wonderful position. Thankful for it, and hope I don't mess it up.
So, well, it's not like you're exactly a newcomer. You've been around the halls for a while. How many years have you been at Lifeway now, Ken?
It'll be 10 years this coming spring.
Wow.
Yeah, and about 18 years in the local church prior to that.
Mm-hmm. And so, you still serve in the local church?
I do. I'm serving a church here in the Nashville area as their education pastor, helping to oversee their groups ministry and their midweek discipleship.
Sweet.
So there used to be a much harder lines between what we refer to as small group and Sunday school. But as the church has evolved, I think those lines are not quite as hard and fast as what they once were. So Ken is director of Sunday school. It's really more about on-campus groups. But group dynamics are going to be more or less the same regardless of the environment, right? I mean, there are some differences, but in terms of like your blog, that is one of the more well-read blogs that we have, and when you teach, you think in terms of group leadership and group dynamics as much as anybody.
Try to. That's absolutely right. I do think the lines have blurred, and we're in a new era right now. It's almost like the rule books, you know, that I used to live by 20 years ago have been tossed out the window, and churches are being very creative, and they're exploring lots of opportunities today to get people plugged into groups, and I'm thrilled for that, to be honest. I don't care where they meet. Let's get people in Bible study. Let's get them connected to fellow believers, and if we can do that, then we can make some headway.
Yeah, I love it. I'm seeing a lot of churches, I don't know if you're seeing this, Ken, that are kind of doing hybrid, where they're doing on-campus and off-campus.
Absolutely.
Mostly what I see is churches that have Sunday school or on-campus kind of exploring the off-campus. But I've also talked to some churches that do off-campus that have room on-campus, and they're looking at people who might be more likely to try out a group if it's easy to go to and it's on Sunday morning. So seeing some of that as well, which is exciting to me.
It is. It's a good trend. And I've told Sunday school leaders, and in fact, I just did it this last weekend, leading some training at a great church in Jonesboro, Arkansas. I told them the mission of Sunday school, it's not on campus, from 9 to noon, maybe when we meet, but the mission starts really at noon Sunday and goes until you go to bed Saturday night. And so I'm all for Sunday school groups getting, off campus and doing things in the community, reaching new people. And if others find that an on-campus experience is better for them, then that's great. Yeah. Let's just meet people where they are and provide Bible studies in a variety of contexts.
Exactly. Make the net bigger.
Yeah.
If somebody is a little shaky about going to somebody's house, then let's cast a net for making it easier.
Absolutely.
But anywhere we can do that. Well, we are starting a new series. This is a two-part series where we are going to be talking about spiritual practices in your group. And I think this will go over whether you're Sunday school, on campus, or off campus. These are practices that you would do either place. And we're kicking it off, part one, with Ken, talking about prayer in your group. And I love that we're starting with this, one, because prayer is good and essential and something that we should all be doing, but I think it's a lot of times left out of the group experience or rushed through in the group experience because we're doing a study, we've got to get through the study, we don't have enough time for prayer at the end, so we rush it or we say, we'll catch it next time. So I think it's something that we need to think about and focus on more, whether you do on campus or off campus. We all have time restraints. Maybe a little bit more on campus, and seems like prayer gets cut out more than other elements. Do you see that, Ken?
Absolutely. And as a group leader myself, I'm leading a group with my wife. I have led two groups actually for about the last 8 or so years, and we face that almost weekly. There's a challenge of limited time, having to wait for some folks to get there in the morning, and then as you're watching the clock tick, you realize that the time that you've got either to teach or to fellowship together or to pray together, it dwindles quickly.
Yeah.
And so it's quite the balancing act.
And from the off-campus experience, we lead a group and, we'll do a study and sometimes the videos are a little bit longer.
Right.
They'll take, 15, 20 minutes and then the discussion gets going. And we've made a hard start and stop for our group. We put it in our group covenant. So we're going to start at 7. We're going to end by 8:30 because we've got people with schedules and kids and all that stuff. And I'll look up at the clock and it's, 8:20, 8:25. I've made a hard stop, commitment. So, you know, we've just got to rush through this, or, you know, we'll do it by email. And so whether you're on campus or off campus, there are time restraints. So I would love to start with this question, which I think is an important one as we think about prayer in groups, is what would you hope to see and hear in a group's prayer time?
This is a great question, and I have to defer here to my friend David Francis, who wrote a book several years ago called Connect to the Third Power, Connect 3. And in this book, he helped us understand the evolution of prayer in groups. And this really informed my understanding and practice in my group and in the one that I'm teaching now at another church where I'm serving. And so in that book, David made the comment that he sees prayer kind of in a three-section grid. And he uses three words that start with the letter C to describe the evolution of prayer in the group. So the first level is the what he calls the class level. And so that's when a group comes together for Bible study. Maybe they're not great friends just yet, but they're forming. And the prayer requests at that level tend to be a little on the light side. People are very cautious about revealing too much information about themselves and their families. And so the prayer requests tend to be, you know, let's pray for world peace. Let's pray for good weather, you know, those kind of things. Aunt Sally's stubbed her toe. And so they're safe prayer requests. That's, you know, the class level. And then he says, as the group continues to meet together and serve together and study together and do life together, they move to the second level and another C word, and that is the community level. And that's where relationships have begun to form. And people are now less afraid to reveal things. They feel better about saying, I need you to pray for my son. He's having trouble on his job. Or pray for me. I just lost my job. Or my husband and I are having marital, you know, issues. Those kind of things. So people start revealing a little bit more of the personal side of their lives. And David says that's a very healthy evolution, going from the general to the more specific. But he said really where you would like to see groups go ultimately is to the last level, and that's the commission level, when they realize that they have the ability to impact other people by sharing the gospel, by inviting them to church, by inviting them into their lives, by inviting them to the group study. He says the prayer request at that level get really fun because you start seeing the interjection of not only, you know, pray for, you know, world peace and pray for me of having trouble on my job, but you find people regularly saying, I really want us to pray today for John. He's my neighbor. He's lost. He doesn't know the Lord, and I really feel a burden for him. And he said, you'll see groups evolve, and when they hit that commission level, which he's, you know, naming after the Great Commission, he said, then you've got a group that's come together and done life together, but they still have a strong outward focus, and they're concerned about those people that are not yet part of the group or not yet believers. And he said, that's a great level to get on and stay on.
I love that because I've seen that progression in our group. We started a brand new group just, I guess, about a year and a half ago, maybe a couple of years now, and it just kind of naturally flowed that way. Now, we went from the general, and it took us probably 3 or 4 months to go from the class to, what was the next one?
Community.
Community, mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're seeing that now. My question for you is, is there anything you can do as a leader, and this is, I would love to know this, to kind of move them to that commission level? Because I don't know that it's ever naturally kind of gone there.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, yes, the leader can certainly have an influence and an impact there by putting out there. They should be aware enough to know that their group is going to land probably somewhere in those first two levels. But something that they can do is to share stories of them sharing the gospel. You know, hey, I had this encounter with someone this week. Maybe it was the checkout person, and I got their name off their badge. You know, they check me out almost every week at the grocery store. I want us to start praying for that person by name. And it starts to let the group know that the leader values, you know, seeing new people come to the Lord, and that he values or she values praying for those people. I think that's a that's a good way to start pointing the group to the fact that, you know, we can be outward focused and concerned about those not yet believers. So I think the group leader has a great impact there. If he doesn't say anything, it may be a long time, a long runway before you ever get to that community level. And so the group leader actually, you know, can get there a lot, help the group get there a lot quicker than if he's just silent and doesn't tell about his experiences.
I think this approach, regardless of whatever machinations or levels of execution, is going to help your group. Just listen to Ken and Chris talk, listen to you guys. One of the things that we run into is this idea of the best way I can describe it is just a rote group prayer kind of existence, to where it becomes, so we move from class to community, but it's hard to get off community. I think that was your point. Mm-hmm. And we get into this kind of petition kind of ritual almost, mm-hmm. that prayer time means, oh, I've got to come up with something from my life to pray about.
Right.
And so I think as whatever it takes as a leader, I think Ken's got some good suggestions. Something that we're doing here at Lifeway are the prayer cards.
Yes.
Where you have names on them, which is not a new idea. That's something just that you can also incorporate in your group life to get this commission aspect into the vernacular. So once you move from class to commission, from class to community, just like you could get stuck in community, where you want to get stuck is commission. So if you can just get there, it seems like you would stay there, and then you would have that more vibrant group prayer time,
absolutely.
Group prayer life even.
Yeah, absolutely. I've asked my group before, you know, who are you praying for this week? You know, who has God allowed you to bump into? You know, is it someone, again, from the gym? Is it somebody at the office? Is it a neighbor, you know, that's new, that's moved into your neighborhood? And I think group leaders can do things like that and to put it out there that there's almost this expectation that we're going to be looking for people that are not connected to God just yet. And it's our job to build those opportunities to have those conversations and almost build the opportunity to present our story to them as we're trying to become friends for Jesus' sake and for them coming to know the gospel and responding positively to that. So, group leaders have a lot of influence to move that group from that second to the third level.
Even the semantics we use. So, move away from referring to it as prayer time, like this is the time in our group when we pray,
mm-hmm.
to becoming a praying group, mm-hmm. a group of prayer. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So, with that in mind, we've already said it, Ken, you lead a Bible study group yourself and have. I mean, you referred it to in the last 8 years, but I suspect, and I think I can be reasonably confident in assuming that you've done this for years. What have you discovered about ways to help the group pray and still allow time for Bible study?
I've learned from the School of Hard Knocks, Brian, because I probably didn't do it as efficiently or as good as I can do it today. You know, when I first started, I probably, Chris, was in that category of, oops, look at the time. You know, we've got 3 minutes left, and I've not managed the clock, and I shortchanged the group and did not do good leadership. And so a few things that I have learned to do that have helped me manage my group's prayer time, one thing is to write those requests as they're coming in on a whiteboard. Now, I know if the group's at a home, that's a little different. You're not going to have a whiteboard probably. But you can still write the request down, and then as we – what I have seen in some groups, like when I go visit churches, I've seen groups that have done just that. They put the names on a board. They're telling the stories about what's going on. Let's pray for this person. And then the group leader might say, well, somebody open us up in prayer. And they never talk about any of the requests that are on the board. So they start just right into the Bible study after that short prayer. So that doesn't feel right to me. And so what I do is if I'm putting those requests on the board, and let's say there's a half a dozen that have come up, then I actually look at my group and I will say, you know, who is going to pray for this first one? And I'll write their name beside it when they volunteer. And we just go down the list until every one of those requests is assigned. And I may ask them to spend a moment in silent prayer, you know, to pray for that person. Sometimes people, they get a little wigged out and they don't want to pray in a group. So I found that if I just ask them to pray for that request for the next minute or so, and then I'll close it out, and then we'll move into the study. I just don't feel right putting a bunch of things on the board and just assuming they're going to get prayed for, because they probably won't. Mm-hmm. And so I like making sure that they're assigned. But I think my favorite method that I have tried, and I don't even know where I got this, so I know I borrowed it from somebody, but it was the basket method. And so sometimes my group will come in, and I'll have an index card on their chair, and that signals to them. They know what we're going to do that day for prayer. And so I have them write their name and either a phone number or an email on one side of the card. Then I have them turn it over, and they will write a prayer request for the week. And we'll pass a little wicker basket around. They'll put them all in the basket. It'll come back to me, and I'll take the first card out and then pass the basket back around, asking them to each take a card out. And what that does is it allows them to know that there is a person in their group who is praying specifically for their need. And I ask the group members, before the week is over, you contact that person. You've got their name, you've got their email or their phone, and you let them know that you have been praying for that certain situation. What I have heard has happened is it has helped our group cross-pollinate relationally. And people that maybe would not have called or emailed or reached out to the person across the circle from them are now developing friendships. And when they get back to church on Sunday, you know, they're asking each other, so how's it going? How did God answer that? Did God answer that request? Do you need me to keep on praying? And I'm seeing relationships blossoming because of that, and you know, and we're getting prayer done at the same time. So I found that to be a very effective way for getting a couple of things done, prayer and relationships.
Yeah, and we talked about sometimes rushing and then emailing, you know, at the end, but yeah. You actually talk about that can be an effective change to do in prayer requests. So do you do that sometimes, email out the requests?
We do, yeah. Sometimes that's exactly how we'll do it if I've, you know, not managed the clock and we've got just a few minutes, then I do one of two things. I'll either take that list that's on the board and take a picture of that and email that to the group and ask them to pray over, you know, a couple of these this week so that I feel like we've got enough people praying and those requests will be covered. And then sometimes I do something a little bit different. I may do this if we're running short on time and I've not managed the clock. I just take responsibility and go, folks, look, I didn't do a great job today managing the clock. We got through the Bible study like we were supposed to and had a great time. Discussion was awesome. But here's what we're going to do. I'm going to send out a short recap of the lesson to everybody on our group ministry list, because not everybody's going to be there that day. And so that way, the people that are absent, they'll kind of know what we did and what we talked about. But then what I want you to do is, if you've got a request, there's something going on, hit reply all and just say, hey, group, this week I'm asking you to pray for X, you know, YZ, and do it that way. So if you've got a prayer need, just reply all. And folks, as you get these requests, let's all pray for these. And so we've done it that way before too.
Yeah, because you are occasionally going to run out of time.
It happens.
Sometimes it's a good change as well. We use for our group a texting app called GroupMe,
yeah,
which a lot of people use and you're familiar with. And we do a lot of prayer requests through GroupMe.
Yeah.
And for the generation of our small group, they're mostly 20-somethings. They're more likely to respond to that than an email, actually. So they'll jump on the GroupMe and you know, pray for their prayer requests. But just getting creative with it, different ways to handle the prayer time. Last question for you, Ken, is what are some other things that you've learned about leading a group to pray?
I have learned that it is easier to do that when I am in that posture myself as a group leader, and there is a genuineness to that process and not a, I need to check this box off for my group because we're a Bible study group and we're supposed to pray. So I want to make sure that as a group leader that I am spending adequate time during the week praying for my group members and praying for those known requests and coming into the group study, honestly curious, you know, how has God moved in the lives of our people this week? So that'd be number one. I say just be genuine about that. The other thing I've learned is that people are really afraid to speak in public. I'm not. It's not a big issue for me. You know, I got over that one, you know, some years ago, but for some folks, even praying in a smaller group, my group runs about 16. And I've got folks that honestly, unless I am very creative in how I draw them out, they won't say a word. And so if prayer time comes around, they are certainly not comfortable to pray in front of the group. They feel like they're going to, you know, verbally stumble. They don't know what to say. They'll feel like, you know, they don't know how they're going to sound, you know, as they're praying. And so what I have discovered is that I can get my group to pray at a deeper level in a deeper way if I will sometimes just tell them, hey, guys, we're going to do this today. I want you to take your chairs, and I want you to just circle up either in threes or fours, trios or quads, and you share prayer requests with one another. And when you're done praying, just silently slip out of the room and let the others finish. And I have found that folks will pray in those small 3- and 4-person groups in ways they will never pray and speak out in groups of 16 to 20 or bigger. So I have found that breaking them down into very small groups is a really helpful thing, a helpful tool to get the group to pray.
Also a way to model. I think a lot of people don't know how to pray. I think that's one of the challenges. We talk about prayer a lot, but I don't know that we really teach how to pray a lot. And so that the small groups and having people share more intimately or pray more intimately, I think is a way to model for those people that maybe aren't quite as comfortable.
That's right. That's right. And I try to help folks understand, you know, prayer is simply having a conversation with God. You know, the book of Romans says, you know, all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. And I've told folks, you know, all who call on the name of the Lord, that's just a long way of saying pray. And so we're talking to God. And so we're just going to have a conversation like we would with another person, you know. And I don't know if that's helpful to them, but I want them to think of it in terms of I'm just having a conversation with my Creator.
So what have you learned about, I know we got to wrap up, Chris, but what have you learned, Ken, and Chris, too, about the best moments to pray in a group for standard prayer? I mean, typically you open and close. But is that doing prayer a disservice, particularly like if everyone's ready to go and already kind of close the proverbial book towards the end and then we pray? Have you changed that up at all, or
Absolutely.
How do you approach that?
No, that's exactly right, Brian. I change it up. Some days, if my group is there on time for the most part, we may pray first. And if they're lollygagging and it's one of those sleepy Sundays, I may save it for the end. But I tell you, the most powerful prayers that have ever happened in my groups have been spontaneous. I had a guy stand up one day, he didn't stand up, but he stood up verbally and said some things that I can't even repeat here on air about how bad his life was. I mean, it just came out of the blue. I was not prepared for this. This was something I was not aware of in his life. And he went off for about 3 to 5 minutes about how much he didn't like being here in the state, and he didn't like his job or his boss, and all he wanted to do, he and his wife, was just sell their home and move back to a state that they'd come from, closer to family, because they just weren't happy. Well, what do you do at that point? You know. So I said, guys, let's just circle around them, put your hands on the shoulders, let them know that you're here physically reaching out and touching them, and let's pray. And so we stopped the Bible study smooth right there, just came to a complete halt, and we prayed for this fellow and his wife for several minutes. And people were crying, and it was a very moving thing. And honestly, at that point, Bible study's over. You know, it's hard to get back to that. So that really kind of became our lesson for the day, was taking care of a group member that was hurting. But it didn't feel right to say, you know, Brian, hey, well, you know, sorry you're having a bad day, but I need to finish my Bible study. Or we'll get to that in 15, 20 minutes during prayer time. It just felt right at that moment to just stop and pray in the middle of that.
Thanks, Ken. So, Chris, you think everyone's familiar by now with the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network? I sure hope so.
I don't know.
We're doing our part.
I would hope so, but I would love for them also to check out another podcast on the network called Making Disciples. It's with Robbie Gallaty and Chris Swain. And they're a part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network family. They've recently covered topics like when discipleship groups don't work, how to gain discipleship momentum for the fall, and why people aren't reading the Bible consistently, which is interesting because that's our next podcast. So if you want to find out more about that, check out our next episode. But just look up Making Disciples on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today.
And certainly Robbie and Chris bring the party with them.
They do. And we'd love for you to subscribe to us as well. If you don't, download. That makes a difference. Leave a comment. Give us a 5-star review. And Brian will come over and help you find Facebook.
Do something. Right. I will help you find Facebook. If that does turn up missing, which is a great Southern phrase, how something can actually turn up missing. You ever thought about that?
Turn up, I like it.
Ah, the idiosyncrasies of the Southern language. Ken, people can follow you on Twitter at Ken Braddy, and I think the same is true at KenBraddy.com.
That is true, two D's in the name, B-R-A-D-D-Y. It's like Brady with an extra D.
K-E-N-B-R-A-D-D-Y.com. Look him up. It is a great blog, and Ken does a great job staying on top of that. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answers Podcast. I'm Brian with Chris for Ken Braddy. Thanks for joining us for this episode on prayer and how to effectively manage prayer and integrate it into your groups. We look forward to being with you again sometime in the very near future.